I'll be talking about Food Desert Census Tract residents and adherence to dietary patterns in the REGARD study. My name is Sindhu Lacour. I don't have any disclosures, but I would love to have some one day. As many of you know, in 2010, the First Lady, Michelle Obama, started the Let's Move campaign to end childhood obesity. And as part of the campaign, one of the goals was to eliminate food deserts by 2017. And since that time, the term food deserts has been widely used in the media. There are a number of different definitions of food deserts. The USDA defines food deserts as census tracts that are both low income and have low access to healthy foods. Low access is defined differently in urban tracts and rural tracts. In urban tracts, low access is defined as a significant proportion of the population living more than a mile away from supermarkets and grocery stores. This is different for rural tracts. It's more than 10 miles away. This map depicts the locations of food deserts across the continental United States. About 10% of census tracts can be classified as food deserts, but there haven't been any nationwide studies that have compared diets in food deserts to diets outside of food deserts. There have been, however, studies that have looked at the food environment and dietary quality. In the ERIC study and the MESA study, both observed that increased supermarket density is associated with increased fruit and vegetable consumption. But these studies are limited to a few different cities and not a nationwide heterogeneous population. As many of you know, there's a lot of time, effort, and money being invested into eliminating food deserts. But what we don't know is how diets in food deserts compare to diets outside of food deserts in a nationwide heterogeneous population. And this is the purpose of this study, to examine the association between living in a food desert census tract and adherence to a priori and empirically defined dietary patterns using data from the REGARD study. The REGARD study was designed to investigate reasons for geographic and racial differences in stroke. And since the incidence of stroke varies by region, race, and gender, the sampling design accounted for this. To be eligible for the REGARD study, participants had to be 45 years or older and either be African American or Caucasian and not meet any of this exclusion criteria. This map depicts the locations of REGARD participants across the United States. REGARD participants were recruited from 2003 to 2007. After obtaining informed consent, participants underwent a telephone interview where demographic variables were collected. After that, the participants received an at-home visit where they were given a food frequency questionnaire. They completed it and mailed it back to the study coordinating center. And after that, the food frequency questionnaires were analyzed to provide information on the usual dietary intake. We used the Block 98 food frequency questionnaire, and this approximates dietary intake of about 108 different food and beverage items. And the questionnaire asks about dietary intake over the past year and provides us with information on a participant's usual dietary intake. For our analytical cohort, we excluded participants who had no geocoding information, had no dietary or covariate information, leaving us with a cohort of about 19,000 participants. We used two methods to identify dietary patterns: an a priori method and an empirical method. The a priori method defined dietary patterns using the Mediterranean diet score. And adherence to a Mediterranean diet pattern is associated with better health outcomes. The empirical pattern used principal component analysis to identify these two different dietary patterns, the southern diet pattern and the plant-based diet pattern. adherence to the southern pattern is associated with worse health outcomes, and adherence to the plant-based pattern is associated with better health outcomes. You can think of the Mediterranean diet and a plant-based diet as being good, that's what you want to have, and a southern diet as being bad, you don't want that. The Mediterranean diet score is comprised of 9 different components, and each component is assigned 0 or 1 point based on consumption of that component. A component is assigned 1 point if consumption mirrors that of a true Mediterranean diet. A component is assigned 0 points if consumption of that component is opposite of that of a true Mediterranean diet. So we can look at something like legumes, which are frequently consumed in a true Mediterranean diet. So high consumption of legumes would receive 1 point, and low consumption of legumes would receive 0 points. Meat is less frequently consumed in a Mediterranean diet. So high consumption of meat would receive 0 points, and low consumption of meat would receive 1 point. And the points assigned to each component are summed to create the Mediterranean diet score. As I talked about before, the empirically identified patterns were identified using principal component analysis. The plant-based pattern was characterized by vegetables, fruits, beans, and fish. And the southern pattern loaded highly in fried foods, processed meats, added fats, and sugar-sweetened beverages. The component fried foods loaded most highly on the southern pattern with a factor loading of 0.56. To calculate the empirically identified dietary pattern score, first, a factor score was calculated for each component. And the factor score was calculated by multiplying the factor loading by the consumption of that component. We can look at the case of fried foods, which had a factor loading of 0.56. And that would be multiplied by the consumption to give the factor score. The factor scores for all of the components were then summed to create the dietary pattern score. And the southern pattern and the plant-based pattern both had separate dietary pattern scores. A higher pattern score indicates stronger pattern adherence. For our statistical analysis, we used logistic regression models where our exposure was residents in a food desert census tract, and our outcome was adherence to the dietary pattern. And adherence was defined as being in the top 25% of that dietary score. We adjusted for a number of confounders and tested for collinearity and interaction. We looked at the association between residents in a food desert census tract and adherence to the 3 different dietary patterns, the southern pattern, bad, in red, and the plant-based pattern and the Mediterranean pattern, which are good, in green. We found that in the regards cohort, characteristics of participants who lived in food deserts were different than participants who did not live in food desert census tracts. We found that the proportion of females, African Americans, those with low income levels, low levels of educational attainment, who lived in the Southeast and who were unmarried, were higher in food deserts compared to non-food desert census tracts. And this is the real meat of our study, which looks at the association between residents in a food desert census tract and adherence to these 3 different dietary patterns. And in this table, I'd just like to point out 5 main points. First, is that living in a food desert makes you more likely to adhere to a poor diet. And we see that here, where residence in a food desert, is associated with 23% higher odds of adherence to a southern diet. And we see that this association is modified by race. We see that among whites, residence in a food desert is associated with 51% higher odds of adherence to a southern diet. And we don't see any association among African Americans. We also see that this association is modified by education. We find that as education level increases, the detrimental effects of living in a food desert also becomes worse. Among high school graduates, residence in a food desert is associated with 16% higher odds of adherence to the Southern diet. Among college graduates, it's 58%. We don't see any association among those with less than a high school education. And this indicates that among those with lower levels of educational attainment, diets seem to be similar in food deserts and outside of food deserts. Among those with higher levels of education, this indicates that they may make different dietary choices when healthier options are available. For the plant-based diet, we didn't see any association. And for the Mediterranean pattern, we found that residence in a food desert is associated with 14% lower odds of adherence to the Mediterranean diet pattern. And this is exactly what you would expect. Living in a food desert makes you less likely to adhere to a healthy diet pattern. To just sum up, the association between residence in a food desert census tract and dietary pattern adherence varies by socio-demographic factors. It varies by race, and it varies by educational attainment in this study. And this may be because food choice is determined by a number of factors, not just availability of food. Food choice can be determined by cultural norms, by dietary knowledge, and by employment. And educational attainment influences many of these determinants of dietary intake, and this is seen very well in this 2013 study, which looked at fruit and vegetable consumption before and after construction of a supermarket in a Philadelphia food desert. And this population contained a very low proportion of college graduates. And they found that fruit and vegetable consumption was the same before and after construction of the supermarket. Our study has a few strengths and limitations. We used different methods of identifying dietary patterns. Regards is a large nationwide population, and there's a lot of variability in the socio-demographic characteristics, which allowed us to really explore effect modification by race and education. Our study is limited in that we use the USDA definition of food deserts, and this may not be comparable to other definitions of food deserts. We also excluded a number of participants who did not have dietary information. The study has a few policy implications. There has been a significant amount of money and effort being invested to eliminating food deserts, and many of you here might be part of that effort. And this study indicates that a multifaceted approach should be taken to improve the nation's diet. In addition to eliminating food deserts, it's very important that there should be interventions directed to change dietary behavior, specifically in certain subpopulations. We found in our study that African Americans and those with lower levels of education eat similarly in food deserts and outside of food deserts. So culturally sensitive and community-driven interventions in these populations may be of use. I'd like to thank all of my co-authors and the Regards team and all of the Regards participants. And I'd be happy to take any questions. Yes.
If you look at education being, you know, maybe a rough proxy for financial means, maybe that being a rough proxy for car ownership or vehicle ownership or access to transportation or all those other things, you would expect the opposite. So how do you explain that opportunity?
Yes, that's been a point that's been brought up a lot. And the way that we interpret this is that people who live outside of food deserts may make different choices when healthier options are available, and people who live in food deserts with higher levels of education may not be able to make those choices. And there's also many other factors that influence where people live. It may be that those with higher levels of education who live in food deserts may have a cultural sensibility that reflects the dietary norms that are around them. The Southern pattern is characterized by all of the foods that you mentioned. And the Southern pattern is probably very comparable to what other people call the Western pattern. I think the Southern pattern is just a name and not necessarily a reflection of only what people in the South are eating. Yes, we did, and we found effect modification by region, but it was a little bit too much and a little bit too complicated to talk about right now. But I can talk about it with you afterwards. Yeah.
Thank you.
No problem.